From Philadelphia, it's Torah Talk. Hello everyone, I'm Michael Karasik, and this week we are reading Parshat Vayikra. That means we're beginning the book of Leviticus and reading Leviticus chapters 1 through 5. So let's start at the very beginning. That's a very good place to start. The Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, "Speak to the Israelite people and say to them, when any of you presents an offering of cattle to the Lord, he shall choose his offering from the herd or from the flock. If his offering is a burnt offering from the herd, he shall make his offering a male without blemish. He shall bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting for acceptance in his behalf before the Lord. He shall lay his hand upon the head of the burnt offering, that it may be acceptable in his behalf in expiation for him. The bull shall be slaughtered before the Lord, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall offer the blood, dashing the blood against all sides of the altar, which is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. The burnt offering shall be flayed and cut up into sections. The sons of Aaron the priest shall put fire on the altar and lay out wood upon the fire, and Aaron's sons the priest shall lay out the sections, with the head and the suet, on the wood that is on the fire upon the altar. Its entrails and legs shall be washed with water, and the priest shall turn the whole into smoke on the altar as a burnt offering, an offering by fire of pleasing odor to the Lord." And isheh, alef shin hey, is the word that JPS is translating here, an offering by fire. And again, in the next paragraph of this first chapter, if his offering is from the flock of sheep or goats, verse 13, "It is a burnt offering, an offering by fire, an isheh, of pleasing odor to the Lord." And again in the third paragraph, "If his offering to the Lord is a burnt offering of birds," verse 17, "It is a burnt offering, an offering by fire, an isheh, of pleasing odor to the Lord." Don't get that word isheh confused with isha, a woman. Okay, we're not doing that. Isheh, as the Brown, Driver, and Briggs Biblical Dictionary explains, is an offering made by fire, used chiefly of offerings of animals, but also of the mincha, the meal offering, in Leviticus 2:11, and of the sacred bread and frankincense in Leviticus 24:7, which was placed on the table as a memorial and finally went to the priests. And you can see many, many more occasions in which that phrase is used in various combinations of words in the BDB entry, which is on the first page of the handout this week. The Hebrew and Aramaic lexicon also says Isha is a nomen unitatis, derived from Aish. Aish is the Hebrew word for fire, a very, very basic word, and still is that word. An Isha is an offering made by fire. What is a nomen unitatis? I looked it up so that you don't have to. That is a noun that takes a word like hair, and you make it a singular noun, a hair, compared to hair. So an isheh is compared to aish is fire. Isheh is a particular fire, I guess. And the Dictionary of Classical Hebrew also says an isheh is a fire offering, i.e., an offering made by fire. I'm not sure what the i.e. added to my store of knowledge there, but maybe it's an offering made by means of fire, rather than that the fire itself is the offering, which I guess would be true in a Zoroastrian ritual. Well, if you know any Hebrew, not even biblical Hebrew, but any Hebrew, that sound S, segol hey, at the end of a word, sounds like it should be coming from a three-letter Semitic root that ends in a he, or that originally at least ended in a yud, like yafeh, beautiful or handsome or attractive, yafeh, the masculine singular, yafah, the feminine singular. What does isheh have to do with any of that if it comes from the word esh? The Gazanius reference grammar of Hebrew says, instead of e, chirik yud, at the end of a word, we find in a few cases the ending e, segol he, arising from I, in isheh, belonging to fire, i.e. a sacrifice offered by fire. To me, that's a little bit of a stretch, but I'm not enough of a Semitics guy to know if that's correct or not. And they give an extra example of livne, the storax shrub from Arabic lubnai. Livne in our Bibles is translated as a poplar. Well, let's ask our friends from the Middle Ages what they think. Rashi, the 11th century French commentator, says, an isheh must be slaughtered for the sake of the fire. An isheh is an offering by esh, fire. And in his comment to Exodus 29:18, which is the first place in the Bible this word occurs, he says, isheh means the turning of the sacrificial pieces into smoke on the esh, the fire. Abraham Ibn Ezra says, the Hebrew word isheh is really an adjective implying something that is offered by fire. The word modified by this adjective in our verse is the whole, for this is an offering that is holy, offered by fire, holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, completely offered by fire. It is isheh, not an isheh, it is isheh, offered by fire. Moving up into the more recent past in the 20th century, Baruch Levine in the JPS Torah commentary says, the etymology of the term isheh is disputed, but it probably derives from esh, fire. It follows the form of certain adjectives and literally means something fiery. So he's actually on board with Abraham Ibn Ezra, it sounds to me. And now for an equal opportunity Baruch Schwartz from the Jewish Study Bible, Hebrew isheh is not derived from esh, fire, but from a root meaning gift. Thus, a better translation is food gift, since the word denotes burnt offerings, cereal offerings, and sacrifices of well-being. It is not used for the purification and reparation offerings, as the latter are not gifts, but rituals of expiation. What exactly is this root that means gift? How do we know that there is such a root? We know it from Ugaritic literature. Ugarit, the ancient city, maybe the, let's say, the 14th to the 12th centuries or so, up on the northern Mediterranean coast, pretty close to the northern border of Syria, at a place called Ras Shamra, discovered in 1929, and with a tremendous amount of literature that has told us what the Canaanites thought in those days, and the stories and poems that were circulating among them, and that clearly have influenced the world of the Hebrew Bible, just as Greek and Latin mythology are an integral part of our English-speaking heritage. Jacob Milgram has more to say about that. He translates, its entrails and shins shall be washed with water, and the priest shall turn all of it into smoke on the altar as a burnt offering, a food gift, an isheh, of pleasing aroma to the Lord. We talked on the podcast about the pleasing aroma maybe 10 or a dozen years ago. This week it's isheh. The term Isha, says Milgram, is usually rendered fire offering and is derived from Esh, fire. This rendering, however, must be rejected, not only because its derivation is dubious, but because it does not meet the data. Certain offerings that never enter the altar fire are nevertheless called Isha. For example, the wine libation, the priestly prebend from the well-being offering, and the bread of display. Conversely, certain offerings that are burned on the altar, at least in part, are never called Isha, such as the purification offering. That's what Baruch Schwartz told us. More of his comment on this week's handout, not on the comment, but you can find it in his Anchor Bible commentary, is a couple of exceptions that he says prove the rule. And now to where this word does come from, if not from Esh, fire. Most likely, says Milgram, Isha is related to Ugaritic Ithet. Well, there's no vowels in Ugaritic, so there's the I aleph vowel, a T with a line underneath it, that's a th as in thin, and a T feminine ending, gift. Or he suggests an Arabic derivation as well. I'm not quite sure whether that is related to the Ugaritic word or not. Because the priests as well as the altar benefit from the Isha, example, I suggest food gift, a shortened form of Lechem Isha, which you'll find in 3:11 and 3:16. This translation is in line with the rendering, a sacrifice that is willingly received by the Lord, in Targum Pseudo-Jonathan and Targum Neofiti, not the two official Aramaic translation, not the official Aramaic translation of the Torah, but two less official alternate Aramaic translations that translate this as a sacrifice willingly received by the Lord. That's what an Isha is. It also suffices to explain why it cannot apply to the purification offering. A sacrifice that purges the sanctuary of the pollution caused by the accumulation of sin can hardly be called a gift. And I'll remind you that Milgram's view, and to me it's very convincing, is that these sacrifices serve an almost medical, hygienic sterilization function to remove the miasma of sin that somehow is sucked up by the altar if you do not get rid of it. And you need to get rid of it because that's the place where you are connected to God. The absence of Isha, Milgram continues, the absence of Isha from later biblical compositions, especially in similar contexts, and he gives them on the handout, indicates that this term became obsolete by exilic times, a conclusion that strengthens the thesis that the prevenience of the priestly text lies in the pre-exilic period. And when he says that this term became obsolete by exilic times, he's quoting a book written by a scholar named Avi Hurwitz from the Hebrew University. I know I must have mentioned him on the podcast a number of times. This is a Hebrew book, but he's got plenty of material in English as well. He has been the most careful scholar in denoting very conservatively what can be called late, that is, post-exilic, biblical Hebrew. And there is a whole scholarly argument about whether there is such a thing. I am definitely on the side of those who think that there is, and who very much admires Avi Hurwitz's work in delineating it. Isha is clearly a word that is intrinsic to the priestly literature, and if that is standard rather than late biblical Hebrew, or classical, some would say, rather than late biblical Hebrew, then it is not post-exilic. But I want to go back from even from standard or classical biblical Hebrew, further back once more to pre-biblical Canaanite from the texts that are written in Ugaritic. And I'm going to put, not on the handout this time, but on the blog post for this podcast, I'm going to put a link to a wonderful talk that gave me the idea to do this subject this week by my friend Gary Rensberg that he gave not too long ago, maybe a month ago, at Oxford University. I'll put the link to the video of the talk on the blog post about what we have learned about biblical Hebrew from the discoveries at Ugarit. If you don't know anything about that, it is quite an eye opener, and even I, who know something about that, found it very entertaining and even informative. I'll just say that one great reason to stop using this word, or at least to stop writing it down, is that when you write it down, if there are no vowel points, it looks a lot like the word Isha, and that is not really what you want to offer on the altar as a reach nichoach, a pleasing fragrance to the Lord. Certainly not by fire. I'll be back with you next week for Parshat Tzav. Until then, this is Michael Karasik saying thank you for listening.